victory over al-Qaeda. In an important way, al-Qaeda has been defeated. At one time, many Muslims admired the organization for its courageous opposition to Western domination, and many Westerners feared that al-Qaeda might draw Muslim communities into a battle with the West. Immediately after the events of September 11, 2001, it was not always clear how the battle for Muslim hearts and minds would end up. With the passage of time, we now know, and al-Qaeda has lost. It is perhaps strange to proclaim al-Qaeda's defeat so soon after an al-Qaeda operative sought to bring down an international jetliner last Christmas Day, and at a time when al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, and al-Qaeda Central in the hills of Pakistan all continue to operate. It's true that al-Qaeda continues to threaten Western interests, and the organization and its affiliates are likely to do so for some time. But the task of containing the damage from perhaps a few thousand fighters is a more achievable task than defeating more than a billion people. We feared that we would have to fight the larger battle, but the battle against a few thousand is the one we're fighting, and which we will continue to commit billions of dollars to fight. Yet the ongoing smaller battle shouldn't prevent us from seeing that al-Qaeda has lost the larger one. After almost two decades of trying, al-Qaeda's thirst for anarchic violence has failed to inspire the multitudes. Instead, authoritative clerics have picked apart al-Qaeda's theology and removed the cloak of divine approval that the organization had appropriated. Even some leading jihadi clerics, such as Sayyid Imam al-Sharif, also known as Dr. Fadl, have repudiated al-Qaeda's views. To be sure, there are still clerics who support al-Qaeda, but they're a shrinking and increasingly isolated minority. Jihad, of course, is not dead. It remains a prominent theme in Islamic thought, a topic that's occupied Muslim theologians for centuries. Yet, strict rules govern jihad, many of which narrow the basis on which it can be waged. Jihad developed as a way to rally the masses behind the political leadership. The idea that some would use jihad to rally the masses against the political leadership was an innovation of the last half century. The anti-establishment ethos of jihadism was one of the most important factors that doomed the movement. Over centuries, Muslim clerics had sought to maintain a difficult balance, acting as a check on government excess without threatening the government itself. Al-Qaeda challenged that balance, and in turn it questioned the legitimacy of legions of clerics who had maintained it. Those clerics fought back with the support of their governments. Al-Qaeda, which tried to overcome a low quotient of clerics with the zealousness of its lay leadership, was no match. Over almost a decade, the clerics reasserted their traditional role and prevented their society's slide toward radicalism. The jihadist performance in Iraq was another contributing factor to their failure. Not only were the bulk of their victims fellow Muslims, but they alienated the very Sunni tribes that were giving them refuge. The organization in Iraq revealed itself to be more a criminal gang than a millennialist movement, and its defeat at the hands of the U.S. military added little to its luster. Finally, intelligence and law enforcement has taken a tremendous toll on the organization. With so many governments seeing the group as an existential threat, the resources poured into disrupting the organization and its communications have had the desired effect. Operational communications have diminished considerably, and suspicion pervades the online chat rooms that have provided such a robust avenue for jihadi communication. As one U.S. government contractor observed privately, "You never know if the guy you're carrying on a discussion with is a bad guy or just another contractor in the next cubicle." Still, it would be a mistake to see al-Qaeda's defeat wholly as a victory for the West. Religious conservatives waged and won the bulk of the ideological battle against al-Qaeda, and they did so with little interest in boosting the forces of secular liberalism. While tolerance and individual rights are cherished principles at the core of the Western liberal tradition, many conservative forces see them as harbingers of atheism, amorality, and social decay. Further, the conservative forces that are rising in the Muslim world tend to be strongly nationalist, scarcely more favorably disposed toward Western government's policies than al-Qaeda is. In Palestine, in Iraq, and beyond, they see an unalloyed record of Muslim suffering and a Western world that's either wholly indifferent to Muslims' plight or is actively abetting that suffering. These conservative forces have risen as al-Qaeda has fallen, dealing a blow to the hopes that many in the West had for the future of Muslim communities after al-Qaeda's demise. Secularists are in retreat, and much of the creativity in these societies is contained in religious communities that seek to embrace modernity on their own terms. Religious television, for example, is far more popular than the news in the Arab world, and its most solid viewing audience is among women, the very people who many Western observers would seek to liberate from the patriarchy of Islamic tradition. Even so, al-Qaeda's failure is good news. The organization's failure renders rapprochement between the West and Muslim communities no less important than it appeared to be in years past, but it's become less urgent. That rapprochement needs to be pursued with patience and creativity and realistic goals. We do not need to conquer one another, but we do need to live together. On that basis, a great deal can be achieved.